Books and Arts.
Book Review. A History of Constitutions. The Rights of Man. The Gun, the Ship, and the Pen. By Linda Colley.
On November 29, 1838, Captain Russell Elliot and the crew of HMS Fly made landfall on Pitcairn, a tiny island in the South Pacific that 51 years earlier was the refuge for 9 mutineers from HMS Bounty. That group's 100 or so mixed-race descendants were increasingly vulnerable to predatory visitors, mainly whalers from New England. Elliot quickly saw what the islanders needed: a union flag and a set of regulations that could become a constitution. There was nothing very remarkable about this in an age when the writing of such documents was all the rage, save one thing. This was the first time a constitution anywhere specifically enfranchised all men and all adult women to vote for the head of their ruling executive. Linda Colley's new book is full of such nuggets of insight. The Gun, the Ship and the Pen is an ambitiously wide-ranging account of the forces that propelled the writing of constitutions, documents that have defined the modern world, from the middle of the 18th century until today. The story begins in 1755 in Corsica, where Pasquale Paoli, a revolutionary adventurer returning from exile in Naples, imbued with Enlightenment ideas about politics, economics, law, and liberty, wrote and established Europe's first modern constitution. Above all, Miss Colley argues, the need for innovative written constitutionalism was driven by the evolving nature of war. The Seven Years' War, which broke out in 1756, was described by Winston Churchill as the First World War. It introduced what the author calls a new era of hybrid wars, in which naval forces with global reach were combined with growing and lethally equipped land armies. Government's need for ever more manpower to fight these wars, and ever-growing tax revenues to pay for them, led to crises at home that could only be tackled by the concession of new rights and promises of wider political participation. Paoli's chance to mobilise his fellow Corsicans came because France was distracted by its struggle with Britain for control of the oceans. The fashion for constitutionalism was turbocharged by high-speed steam-powered printing presses, which made it possible to hold a wider conversation with increasingly literate citizens about the laws and principles that should govern their lives. Among others, citizens of the new United States of America and Republican France no longer saw themselves as passive recipients of laws determined by ruling elites. Thanks to those whirring presses, and a little later, the telegraph, a constitution drafted in one polity could influence and inform the drafters in another. Jeremy Bentham, an English jurist and founding father of utilitarianism, fervently believed that good constitutions had features that could be applied for every territory, for every race, and for every time. Britain's lack of a written constitution, a consequence of political stability and financial muscle, did not stop Bentham being seen by himself and others as a kind of international consultant on their drafting. For some, constitutions serve more practical and less idealistic political aims. Most late 18th and 19th century constitutions made it pretty clear that they conferred rights only on the white males who were needed to fight wars and pay taxes. For all its apparent high-mindedness, America's constitution provided a legal cloak for the appropriation of land from indigenous peoples. Napoleon Bonaparte, a prolific constitution writer, deployed the pen to legitimize territorial conquest and personal power. A few newly independent Latin American countries produced more racially inclusive constitutions. Those drawn up in places such as Haiti, Liberia, and Hawaii reflected their different circumstances and aspirations. A constitution could also be a means to announce a country's modernization, and thus its clout, prosperity, and solidity. For trading partners, it could be an open-for-business sign. For potential adversaries, a warning. A case in point is the Japanese Meiji Constitution of 1889. The author gives a gripping account of how this document and the official commentary on its implications cleverly pick and mix Western principles and Japanese traditions, not least in the idea that the Constitution was itself a gift from the heaven-descended divine and sacred emperor to his subjects. That it survived largely intact until 1947 helps explain subsequent events. Although this sprawling book sometimes crams in too much, Miss Colley writes with such elegance and verve that the journey and the characters it involves are always fascinatingly worthwhile. This is an original global history that adds to readers' understanding of the world they live in.